produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. This is your daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Daily Audio Stash is where responsible marijuana smokers listen in on the latest news about cannabis, hear the voices of the marijuana law reform movement in special segments and interviews, and kick back with comedy and music no other podcast can offer. It's Normal's Daily Audio Stash. More information at normalaudiostash.com. First up today, it's news from Normal. Our news today, UK targets patient providers in cannabis crackdown. The Guardian newspaper in the UK reported the following this weekend. Prosecutors are taking a firm line on the supply of cannabis for pain relief to people with chronically painful conditions, such as multiple sclerosis, despite the downgrading of the drug from Class B to Class C. Two Crown Court trials, one starting this week and one next week, will accuse four individuals of supplying illegal drugs through the organizations Bud Buddies and THC for MS, therapeutic help from cannabis for multiple sclerosis. THC for MS says on its website that it has supplied 33,000 bars of cannabis chocolate to bona fide MS sufferers over the last 5 years. Mark Gibson, Leslie Gibson, and Marcus Davies of THC for MS face a charge of conspiracy to supply cannabis in a trial that begins Wednesday at Carlisle Crown Court. Bud Buddies offered a number of cannabis preparations, including cannabis cream for topical application to anyone with a proven medical need. Its founder, Jeffrey Ditchfield, faces 9 charges of cultivation and supply of cannabis, including a charge of supplying a cannabis plant received by John Reed, now Home Secretary, in November of 2005. His trial starts on July 24th at Mold Crown Court. All four face maximum sentences of 14 years in prison. Estimates suggest that between 10% and 30% of MS sufferers in Europe use cannabis to alleviate the pain and distressing symptoms of the disease. Many say it alleviates their symptoms where ordinary prescription drugs have failed. Few medicines are effective for treating MS, which affects around 85,000 people in the UK. MS patients say the prosecutions, if successful, will close down this route to help while the government drags its heels on licensing a cannabis-based drug. Sativex, a cannabis-derived medicine which can be sprayed under the tongue, has been available in Canada since 2001. In March 2003, GW Pharmaceuticals submitted a product license application for Sativex to the UK Medicines and Healthcare Products Regulatory Agency, or MHRA. But despite evidence in small-scale clinical trials that the cannabis derivative THC relieves pain, no license has been forthcoming. A 3-year trial to test whether cannabis derivatives slow the progress of MS as well as alleviating symptoms is just getting underway. The Home Office announced last November that Sativex could be imported and prescribed by doctors on a named patient basis, while still unlicensed, but few patients who have asked for it have been able to get it, according to a survey by Disability Now. A cannabis-using MS sufferer who asked not to be named said her request to be prescribed Sativex had been turned down. Quote, "I find it inconceivable that the CPS sees these prosecutions in the public interest when there is still no legal way for the people who are helped by cannabis to obtain and use it," close quote, she added. The British Medical Association said in a 1997 report, quote, "While research is underway, the police, the courts, and prosecuting authorities should be aware of the medicinal reasons for the unlawful use of cannabis by those suffering from certain medical conditions, for whom other drugs have proved ineffective," close quote. But the Crown Prosecution Services has continued to prosecute both users and suppliers of cannabis for medicinal purposes. Some have been convicted, but others were found not guilty after successfully raising the defense of, quote, necessity, close quote, which allows an illegal act to avert a greater harm, in their cases, severe pain. Those acquitted, including a man with spinal injuries who set up a medical marijuana cooperative and a doctor who supplied her daughter, whose illness was not specified. But the appeal court closed off the defense of necessity last year, ruling in 6 test cases that it did not apply to the use of cannabis to relieve chronic pain. Claire Dyer, legal editor of The Guardian in the UK, reported this story this weekend. More information about this story is available at normalaudiostash.com. Welcome back to the Audio Stash today. I'm your host, Chris Goldstein. Hope everyone had a great weekend out there. We've assembled a spectacular Activism Monday show for you today. Take a moment to join us at Normal. Visit norml.org. Let's get to our first segment today. Last week on the program, we heard an exclusive interview with Rick Steves, the best-selling author, PBS travel host, and Normal Advisory Board member. Rick shared his reasons and passion for U.S. marijuana law reform. You can listen to last Monday's show right in our full archive at normalaudiostash.com. Rick's involvement with Normal goes back a few years, and in 2005 he delivered the keynote address at the Normal Conference. Today we'll listen into a section of that speech. Rick offers some tools and words of wisdom for all of us seeking reform.
Europeans are quick to remind me that in my country has 4% of the world's population with 25% of its prisoners. That's not a good statistic. Europe has learned that you cannot legislate personal morality. It's futile. It's counterproductive. The Dutch consider when they see the Dutch say we're businessmen. If there's a problem, we deal with that person as if he's a future customer or partner. The Dutch have so many creative ways to solve problems. You can complain about junk mail all you want. In the Netherlands, they've got stickers on their mailboxes that says yes or no when it comes to junk mail, so they don't get junk mail unless they want it. You know, Americans say we can't have pedestrian street because then I can't get my car to my shop. Well, in Europe, they've got pedestrian streets with little swipe things for your little local credit card, and you swipe it and the pillar goes down and you can drive in if you're a resident, but otherwise it's traffic-free. In the Netherlands, 40% of the traffic is on two wheels. There's entire communities in Europe that are going to be wind-powered. There's a race going on right now for that. They know how to solve their problems and deal with their problems in ways that think out of the box. And as Europe unites, it's getting more impressive what they're doing. Yes. It's easy to write off Europe as the old world, but they've got a bigger economy and a bigger population than we do right now. 400 million people with $11 trillion GDP. And they're not spending half of their disposable income on the military. They're investing it in their own infrastructure, and it's breathtaking what's going on over there. And the hard choices we're making to find $60 billion to cover our government's budget needs are coming right into people's programs that weaken our communities, whereas in Europe, that'd be the last thing they would be cutting. Europe knows how to deal with some of these social problems. Prostitution, there's no disease, there's no crime with prostitution in Europe. They've arranged it in a way where prostitutes have their own unions. They've got tipple zones in the Netherlands. A tipple zone is where it's the sound a mouse makes when it runs across the floor. Tipple, 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 tipple. And they've got these, instead of having the lowest class of prostitutes, the drug addicts are on the streets, these are the people that are put in a tipple zone, and there they've got a clinic, and they've got a responsibility to visit with the doctors and the health people, and they know that these people are going to be dealing with their hard drug problems and not spreading diseases. And these days when a prostitute in the Netherlands has trouble, she pulls her emergency cord or pushes her emergency button. A pimp doesn't come, but the police come. And that's a good way to solve that kind of problem that's not going to go away otherwise. Well, of course, when we think about the Netherlands, we in this room anyways, we think about coffee shops. And boy, oh boy, coffee shops in the Netherlands, you look at one of their menus, it reads like a drug bust in our country. And they've got all the loner bongs, they've got email, you go to check your email and you realize, oh, this is a coffee shop cyber cafe. It's a community center for people who want to go out socially and enjoy a little pot. And it's also considered by law enforcement officers and health officials in the Netherlands as a good wall between the responsible adult use of soft drugs and hard drugs. And there's nothing soft about hard drugs in the Netherlands. I mean, they are anti-hard drug problems, and it is classifying marijuana as in the category of alcohol and tobacco. But the law enforcement officers see it as a wonderful way to communicate with people who have problems with hard drugs. They go to the coffee shops. If there's a problem with some chemical drug or if there's something they want to communicate, that's where they go. And the people who run these coffee shops serve as a nice wall between problems with hard drugs and recreational use among adults for marijuana. Now, after 15 years of this, the Netherlands, it's clear, even people who are against drugs are in favor of decriminalizing marijuana. Teen use does not go up. There's 15 years experience with that. The crime element around drugs goes way, way down, and it's a good way to communicate with hard drug problems and deal with that more effectively. In the Netherlands now, this model works well. Many places in Europe, they're doing progressive things, but it's tough with the United States pressure now. I had people in Copenhagen tell me they have to arrest a couple of pot smokers every year just to maintain favored trade status with the United States of America. That's a pathetic thing. Well, coming home for me is always a little bit of a jolt. You know, the first person that meets me at the airport is a dog, and I just can't help but think one nation under surveillance. You know, and come home to the land of the... you know, we pride ourselves in having this life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but we've got the shortest vacations in the rich world. We've got an uptight situation about sex where even my TV shows are rated for mature audiences only. I mean, if you can imagine that, David's going to be pixelated here pretty soon. TV programmers around the United States now, when I do travel shows on PBS, if you don't know, and they've got a list of how many seconds of marble penis and canvas breast are showing in my as I show art from Europe. Because a lot of programmers can't inflict a Titian painting or a Michelangelo statue on their viewership in some conservative communities. So in a lot of regards, we're going in the wrong direction in this society, and that's why I think it's just great for all of us to get together and encourage each other and break from this huddle and go back into our communities. Of course, jailing people for pot in Europe would be laughable, but that's not the case here in the United States. Now, in so many ways, I think we are just living a lie, and that's one reason why I got involved in Normal. I just don't think if you're a successful, affluent, free country, you need to have lies. You don't need to embrace lies to con your electorate into this or that. Now, you know, we just heard that intelligence on weapons of mass production was mistaken, you know, and we all believe that, oh, they didn't know that. I mean, somebody should just say BS, I think, when they get these kind of admissions later on. We are the only nation we're outvoted routinely 140-4 in the United Nations on issues of environmental stuff, on development in the third world, on criminal court, on Cuba, on Israel. It's 140-4. Who stands with us? Israel, Marshall Islands, and Micronesia. Those are the people that vote with us in the United Nations. That's what I call a rogue nation. If there's something going on to work on problems with desperately poor people, there's one country that gets in the way, the USA. If Canada wants to give a discounted medicine for AIDS to Africa, who gets in the way of it? We do. It's just, if Americans knew this, if it could be communicated effectively, I think it would be not a very tough sell to get our country a little more tuned into the needs of people on this planet. But we are embracing these lies. We buy this stuff. No Child Left Behind. Clean skies. I love trees. The party of life. Tax relief. Death tax. All of this terminology we just embrace. They call it the Defense Department. You know, nobody should ever let that word go by without a challenge. It's not a Defense Department. In this country, we spend as much as the rest of the world put together in the military, and you can't get elected without promising more. There's a mania in that regard, and it's it's a big problem. We hear that we're for peace and we've got these Christian values, but we're pounding plowshares into swords these days at record pace. And somebody's got to stand up and just say, you know, when Bush talks about freedom and liberty, he's talking about freedom to other people's natural resources and liberty to use their cheap labor. That's what they're talking about. I was just down in El Salvador last week, and boy, I just wanted to see what's going on in the developing world. And they've got their struggles between the left and the right down there, and the left-wing party in El Salvador was almost going to win the president's election last year, and President Bush had to send his brother, Jeb, down there to stand by the right-winger and tell the Salvadorans, if you vote for the left-wing, we're going to stop remittances coming down from all the refugees working in the United States, which is a third of the money in that El Salvadoran economy. Well, all the people vote the right-wing against their interests because of the threat by the United States. That's democracy these days. The leading Jesuit priest, educator in El Salvador, said whenever he hears the term democracy these days, his bowels move. So, by the way, I've got a journal about that. I'm just very happy to get that up just the last couple of days. If you're curious about what I learned down in El Salvador, it might be interesting to you. It's at ricksteves.com, and you're welcome to check that out. Well, one thing I'm concerned about is the mass dumbing down of our society. And when all this stuff I've been talking about, we go, yeah, yeah, yeah. But the average person, they don't get it, you know. And it's because of fear, I think, and because they're trying to dumb us down. Powerful forces in our society would find it convenient if we all become just mindless producer consumers. We've got to not let them dumb us down, because when we're dumbed down, that's the only way political initiatives against the interest of the people in general can have a chance. The news is not news. Reality TV is not reality. When you see steroids on TV and Michael Jackson and Terry Schiavo and so on, nobody's talking about the big issues. I mean, every day, if you care about people, if you're in the sanctity of life, every day, three times as many people who died on 9/11 die in Africa, every day because of AIDS. That could be dealt with. That's a real problem. You know, we hear about the tsunami, but then it's gone out of the news, and nobody tells us that every week there's a tsunami worth of innocent children that die of starvation on this planet. It's just structural poverty, and America is the flag bearer of this structural poverty around the planet. And as good people, we can encourage our neighbors and so on to get a little more progressive about that. Now, I guess the problem with marijuana is if they're trying to make us just mindless producer consumers, marijuana is not good on either account. It doesn't make us want to produce more, and the only thing we would consume more is Cheetos. I think marijuana, the thing that the society doesn't like about marijuana is it turns people who wouldn't otherwise be poets into poets. You know, you can think of Maslow's famous... think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, in college, remember that? And first you get your clothes and your car and your house, and then you can do things that are more creative and so on. And actually on the top you got selfless actualization, helping other people. It's more convenient in our society to have barbed wire here so that we continue to consume out and out and out, not realize we can step over the barbed wire and live more fulfilling lives. One of the reasons why philosophically I'm into marijuana is because it's a good way to cut that barbed wire and be true to yourself and be what really is successful. Now, to sell this propaganda, it's the big lie thing. And Hitler learned you can tell a big lie and tell it over and over again, and people believe it if you tell it enough times. And we've got to recognize the propaganda. And the problem with the propaganda that's going out in our society, I think, is it erodes the credibility. It erodes the credibility of the government, of schools, of families. When it comes to marijuana, I mean, we've got a government, a White House, that spends millions of dollars advertising in the Super Bowl trying to tell people that marijuana causes teen pregnancies. It's surrounded by beer ads. I mean, what's causing the pregnancies? You know? Now, I've got teachers, friends who are teachers, and this DARE program, by any teacher's assessment, is somewhere between ineffectual and counterproductive. When you've got a DARE officer coming to school, they'll meet with the teachers in the teacher's lounge. These teachers, who are free spirits, Dead Poet Society kind of stuff, you know, they are cowed into silence when the DARE officer is there. You can't hear a pin. You can hear a pin drop in the teacher's lounge. Nobody will question DARE because it is bad news for your job security. If you are known as somebody who is a little bit open-minded about creative ways to deal with problems with drugs in children, it is so exciting to go to a DARE meeting at school and question it. I mean, every parent there wants to do it, but they're just too chicken. Every parent knows this is bogus, but they just are afraid, and this fear is what's keeping us down. At home, I'm a parent, I've got two teenage kids. My wife is a nervous wreck. You know, us parents are taught that this is a gateway drug and it's 20 times as powerful as back when we did it innocently and when we were kids and all this kind of stuff. Well, I guess for me, I'm so excited about having credibility with my kids. And one of the perks I get for being on the advisory board here at Normal is I can invite Keith Stroop over for dinner and he'll come and he'll sit down with our kids. And I was just so excited to introduce my children, my teenage kids, to a lawyer who has dedicated his life to defending an ideal rather than people with a lot of money.
That was Rick Steves speaking at the 2005 Normal Conference. For more information about Rick, his travels, books, TV and radio programs, and links to hear the entire speech, just visit normalaudio-stash.com. Next up today, let's get to some Stash music for our Monday. Here's the Screaming Cheetah Wheelies with High Time We Went.
Thank you.
was the Screaming Cheetah Wheelies from the High Times Magazine Normal Foundation Hempilation album here on Normal's Daily Audio Stash. Now we all get to go on the road to a wonderful summer gathering up in the Rockies with the High Times podcast crew and Normal Membership Services Coordinator Jess Gosshorn. They traveled out to Colorado to the gorgeous and cool pine forests for the Rainbow Family Gathering.
Hi there, this is Jess Gosshorn, Director of Membership Services for Normal, reporting for High Times from the 35th Annual Rainbow Gathering in Colorado's Root National Forest. Welcome home! Since 1972, the Rainbow family has gathered on federal land with no permits and no leaders. Despite government repression, they've drawn 20,000 people to this remote alpine wilderness where they supply drinking water and free food.
Right now we're at a dinner circle and everyone's about to be fed communally, and everyone, it's entirely run on donations, and everyone gets fed at the same time in a big circle, and it's a very, very beautiful thing that goes on here.
The gathering is a completely cashless economy. Bartering and sharing are strongly encouraged. Buying and selling are not permitted. On July 4th, Independence Day, the gathering will culminate with a silent meditation, followed by a giant Om circle and a prayer for world peace. The Rainbow family will remain on the site for weeks afterwards to restore the natural environment to its pristine condition. The Rainbow family will also play a major role at this year's Cannabis Cup, including the induction of several elders into the Counterculture Hall of Fame.